morning, Sports Radio 950 KJR, and we begin this hour with the Ocho 8 stories in 8 minutes to get you up to date on everything happening in your sports world. And we will start with your Seattle Seahawks, who have started the season at 0-2. Here's Pete on the slow start.
It's really disappointed that we didn't show better in the first half. The first half just was much of a carryover from last week. We got sacked a bunch of times and couldn't get rolling and didn't convert a third down and get on offense.
0-2 is not a death sentence. I know everybody hears that doom and gloom statistic out there about 11% of teams that start 0-2 end up not making it to the playoffs. Well, most of the teams that start 0-2 are terrible. And so I think that that probably is what sways that statistic more than anything else. In other words, it's not the 0-2 start that gets in your way of making the playoffs. It's a bad roster. So if you were somebody that started this season and you felt really good about this team, and you understood there are going to be a few growing pains in the first couple of games of the year on the road against what are probably going to be improved teams in Denver and Chicago, then I don't think that you should feel like you took any hits to your playoff chances, at least not all that much. So I think that a good team will survive an 0-2 start. A team that is a playoff-caliber team can survive an 0-2 start. You saw it in 2015. I don't remember too much panic about that Seahawk team in 2015 that started 0-2, and they ended up making it to the playoffs with room to spare. So 0-2, to me, is not doom and gloom time. I think there's more to worry about, Bucky, as to whether or not this roster's good enough to make the playoffs.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that the 0-2 shouldn't be the gloom part. I think there's just a lot of people out there that were very skeptical coming into the season. I mean, there's the true fans are like, nope, we're going to be fine. You know, addition by subtraction, get rid of some of those attitudes, we're going to be fine. And then there's a lot of other people like, yeah, we just lost a ton of really good players. And now you throw an 0-2 start on that, and I think there's a lot of people that are already, well, like I said earlier, Puckett's already looking at next year's draft.
And that's a really emotional person.
He's quite emotional.
Yeah, he swings. He swings. Yes. Now, I will argue with one thing you said in there. I don't think you're a true fan if you're just... I don't think it necessarily makes you a true fan that I believe in my team 100% no matter what. I think a true fan can be somebody that, like, I don't know about this year. Like Slick Hawk, I didn't know about this year. There's no truer fan than that guy. I think a true fan can be honest with his or herself about the status of their team.
It's true. I guess what I mean by that is the Broncos over the being a diehard Bronco. The Broncos have gone through some coaching changes that I wasn't 100% sure of. But then there's a part of me that's like, you know what? I'm gonna believe in Josh McDaniels. I'm gonna kind of trust in it. And then all of a sudden it's like 6-0, and I'm like, yeah, good. And then he tore the team apart, and so I'm like, so it's one of those. Sometimes your fandom will get in the way of your logic, is what I meant by it, more so than you're not a real fan if you're not like that. I don't mean that by any stretch.
And vice versa. Sometimes the logic couldn't get in the way of your fandom.
True.
That's true.
Absolutely.
Very true.
No doubt about it. This guy right here is the perfect little case study. I think that he's got a realistic view of this upcoming year, but that didn't stop him from being mortally depressed after each of the first two games of the year.
God, no, because I want to be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, he's rolling in here, and he doesn't even talk to us till like 8:15 the day after a game.
Little bit pouty.
So, 0-2, game 3 this week against the Dallas Cowboys. More on that in a moment. Now, yesterday, a big topic on our show was the Chris Carson situation and Pete Carroll's dismissal of the question about Carson only getting 6 carries by claiming he was gassed, and that's all we could really give him.
Brian Snyder took Carson off the special teams units when he saw how well Carson was running early in the game. Now, that would be really early in the game, like the first 3 plays, because he only ran 3 times in the next 3.5 quarters after that.
Yeah, so that was Greg Bell with us a little bit earlier in the show. So, again, just to set it up, I mean, just the dismissal of, no, it was just gassed. And then Pete had to kind of backtrack on that the next day. And I think, and Hugh made a great point yesterday, that's kind of throwing a player under the bus.
It's calling him soft, really.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather you tell them you know, that I was throwing up in the corner, or, you know, I had personal issues, you know,
right.
something like that, rather pooed my pants in the first right. quarter and needed to run to the locker room. You know, something like that, rather than say, I'm a professional running back giving my opportunity to start for the first time in my life at the National Football League level, and I tapped out after six carries. So Pete kind of backtracked from that yesterday, said there was miscommunication, which I don't buy that either. That's kind of unforgivable. You had that much miscommunication over somebody that valuable to your team's success, a starting running back, in a week in which you are determined to establish your running game, and you had miscommunication over the availability of your starting freaking running back?
Yeah, I think that doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense to me. You would think that you would kind of know the whereabouts and how well they're playing. And if it was literally you said, hey, we're going to run the ball, and Chris Carson is my bell cow.
Yeah.
Jeez. Then you're not going to let him. You're not going to have him play in special teams, I wouldn't think.
But. Need more bell cow.
Cowbell.
I could really use some more bell cow.
Yes.
Watch out over the weekend. You got to hit me with that bell cow, Pete.
I need more bell cow.
I need more bell cow.
Stab you in the face with a soldering iron.
You know what I was really missing in that game, Pete? I need more bell cow.
Yep, definitely. So who knows, man? Who knows why you'd do that?
It's a strange story. I don't know why they're fessing up. I think it's one of two things. Either Pete just really prefers Rashad Penny and is trying to keep Chris Carson motivated. I don't know. Or secondly, that maybe Carson got injured on one of those two special teams plays and Pete didn't want to face the music of why he's got his starting running back playing special teams. I don't know. I think we'll find out the truth at some point, but right now we haven't. Yesterday, another thing that Greg Bell called a major fiasco. Tom Johnson signed with the Vikings. Now, some of you are like, Tom Johnson, I thought he was on our team.
Yeah,
well, going into last week, there was a little bit of a numbers crunch roster-wise. A trade that the Seahawks had pulled off for safety Luani from the Raiders. They wanted to keep Luani, but they had to make a difficult decision on who to cut. Well, they decided to cut starting defensive tackle Tom Johnson, who they signed from the Vikings in the offseason. The feeling being that, look, we can't expose any of our young guys at their small salaries that we could possibly lose on the waiver wire, so maybe we can slip Tom Johnson through. Tom Johnson was like, all right, you want me back? That's good. Sitting on my couch, I'm watching my team play, and, you know, all right, fine. You know, you try to slip me through and get me back. I'm a little insulted, but... And then apparently Bucky Tom had this realization, why am I sitting on my couch waiting for the Seahawks to call me back? I can go out as a free agent, and I can go sign with a team, and I can double dip.
Yeah.
It's the one thing that all football players love, the idea of double dipping. They have guaranteed my contract. They are paying me to play them later this year now, as I'm going to sign with the Minnesota Vikings, make two salaries, and now I'm going to go back to my old familiar stomping grounds and play with my team.
Yeah, that's a big-time screw-up right there.
Yeah.
And the bad thing is, who knows if we'll ever get to the bottom of it. You say you want to keep the backup safety, and he didn't play one snap.
One snap.
You need a backup safety, and you in turn sit your starter from week one. Or not sit him, you release him. Doesn't make a lot of sense. So enjoy that cap hit.
Is there a big Daryl Daniels market out there?
Every sports fan does some head scratching. Is this the most you've scratched your head, Slick Hawk? Like in the last 48 hours?
Just the last couple of years, but especially, yeah. Yeah, this has been a real weird first couple of weeks to a season.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's just...
We're going to run the ball for the first series.
No, we're not.
For the first series, we are.
Yeah.
And then we're done with that idea.
Fooled ya.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows, man?
I don't know.
Well, it's Wednesday, and so Wednesday is when we start our transition, even during a Monday Night Football week, from reviewing the last game and previewing the next game. So, Let's just throw it out there. Here come the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, I can't wear these. They look ridiculous. You look like a cowboy, huh? I don't want to be a cowboy.
Cowboys did win on Sunday night against the New York Giants, so they are 1-1 on the season. Defensively, putting up some pretty good numbers, so that's not good news for Russell. They've got another great pass rusher, DeMarcus Lawrence. I mean, there's a very real argument to be made that the Seahawks' first four games of the season, they are facing the four best pass rushers in the National Football League.
DeMarcus Lawrence played last year, right? When we played the Seahawks played against the Cowboys?
Yep.
On the road?
Yep.
Okay.
So, another one. Another good one. And we will, of course, really elevate our preview of Cowboys-Seahawks on Thursday and Friday's shows. College football for the Huskies, big game this week. They take on the Arizona State Sun Devils. It's Herm Week.
Hello. You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You play to win. And I don't care if you don't have any wins. You go play to win. When you start telling me it doesn't matter, then retire. Get out. Because it matters.
Right, you know.
Sun Devils come in at 2-1. Huskies go in at 2-1. Should be a good game, and the Huskies are favored by 17.5. Wow, that seems like a big number.
Yeah, it does.
But the clear-cut favorite, we all knew that, against Herm Edwards and his Sun Devils. Cougs have a big game on Friday night against the USC Trojans. Cougs undefeated. Trojans look terrible so far this year. And we'll see if Jason Gesser and that entire story ends up being a distraction for the Cougs football program in any way, shape, or form. But they've got their biggest game of the year to date Friday night against the USC Trojans. Mariners won't win the American League West.
Pitch on the way. Did he go around? Yes, he did. It's his first base umpire, Tripp Gibson, and that is the ball game.
Mariners officially eliminated last night from winning the division.
Yep. I don't think too many of us thought that they were going to win that division from the get-go.
Weren't they officially eliminated in May, really? I mean, maybe not mathematically, but...
There was an awful lot of talk about, let's get greedy, let's go for that American League West, which, of course, every team's going to do. But, yeah, I don't know if it was in the cards. I certainly didn't go as far as predicting possibility there of winning the American League West. But still, on a season in which you're flirting around with the playoffs and you officially get eliminated from the American League West race, worth mentioning as they lost last night against the Houston Astros. All right, coming up next, as we have rolled through another Ocho, Jason Lockenfora will join us. We'll ask him why he's starting nasty rumors about Russell Wilson.
Ladies and gentlemen,
coming to you live on Seattle's original diehard sports station, Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR. Now back to Chuck and Buck in the morning.
I want you to want me.
Conversation with Jason Lockenfora here on Chuck and Buck in the Mornings is brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. Come to the EQC I-5 Sports Bar and watch David Softy Mahler. Ever heard of him?
Yeah, he's one of my favorites.
Is that right?
Well, he's my 1, 2, there's you and me, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's like my 7th favorite on this station.
7th?
Yeah.
I'm more
he's
of
always
a,
played for one team, right?
I'm more of a Fane guy. The two are going to start their broadcast. Their broadcast live at 3 p.m. After the broadcast, watch the game with Softy in the I-5 Bridge Nightclub, where you can enter to win $150 quarterly cash drawings, play $5 sports boards, feast on game time grub, and finish it all off with refreshing domestic drafts. That sounds like a good time with those fellas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
All right, joining us now is pot stirrer Jason Lockenfora, NFL insider from CBS Sports, who's trying to trade our beloved quarterback away. What
gives? I ain't trying to do nothing, man.
What gives?
I'm just rocking out to Cheap Trick. I ain't trying to do a damn thing.
And this is going to be, though, a conversation, is it not, that a lot of different organizations are going to be engaging in going forward. This whole notion of, man, if one more quarterback making a low salary ends up winning a Super Bowl, I think a lot of teams are going to go down that Sam Darnold road, that Chicago Bears, let's get a defensive standout, Khalil Mack road. At least the conversation's going to be held by a lot of teams going forward, right?
Sure. I mean, I look, no one way to skin a cat. Different strokes for different folks, different ways to build your team. I think we've reached a point in the NFL where the money ballization of football, for lack of a better term, isn't nearly where it is in other sports, but it's at least starting. And those conversations are happening, and teams are investing more in analytics and in strategic thinkers and in inefficiency experts. And, you know, depending on your owner, your payroll, your revenue streams, the construction of your roster, where you think you're going, what you think you do well. Do we excel at the draft? Do we excel in free agency? Do we excel in trades? How do we self-scout ourselves? Leads to different models. I would just, in general, caution that, and I don't know if we've had this discussion or not, but I know I've had it with other people. Just go back and look at, like, the last 15 Super Bowls and count up the quarterbacks who at one point in time, even if it was only for a snippet, were the highest paid player in the game. And go look at the ones who've never come close to it. And you come up with a whole lot more Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger's, Tom Brady's, Joe Flacco's, Matt Ryan's, Cam Newton's, than you do Nick Foles.
Yeah, but that's the special sauce, though. It's finding that guy that is going to be somebody to build around and getting him before he makes a lot of money and winning that Super Bowl. It's
got to the Super Bowl, I mean, Russell was the exception, but Russell was about to become, for a period of time, the highest paid quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, Flacco, they were already willing to franchise him, so they, at that point, they were already willing to pay him $16. Now, he goes out and wins the Super Bowl and ends up breaking the bank, but, like, made a lot of money. I mean, Peyton Manning's in the Super Bowl. He's making $20 million a year. Matt Ryan's in the Super Bowl. He had already once been the highest paid guy in the league. He was about, you know, he's about to become it again. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, yes, he was a bargain when he made it, but he also was a guy they were about to invest hundreds of millions of dollars in over the course of time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the idea that, like, you mentioned the Bears. I mean, could that defense be so... Like, okay, could that defense be, I don't know what their nickname is yet, but like what the Legion of Boom was, or, and I don't want to just limit to the secondary, but what that entire Seattle defense was 5 years ago. They may be that good. Like, they may, with Khalil Mack, be able to be that. But if they're anything less than that, they ain't going anywhere with Trubisky, because Trubisky can't throw the ball 7 yards downfield, you know? So, like, I still think you need a quarterback, but at what price point, and what could I fetch for my quarterback, and what could I do with those other assets, and can I turn one thing into seven? I mean, different people would approach all those different models in different ways.
Now, what you were floating out is what the package would be if, indeed, the Seahawks were to ever engage in trade talks with other teams, right? That's what you wrote about with three first rounds.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're not talking, so people in the league are talking about the fact that they're not talking. Whether it means a hill of beans or not, like, this stuff doesn't happen in a vacuum. Like, you know, just add up all the dudes who got paid in the 2 weeks before the season, right? All that happened. People resetting the market all over. Things are jumping. Caps going up. Maybe gambling money's coming in. Always rather be a year too early than a year too late. And there's not even a, hey, man, what do you think? Not even a taking of the temperature, which is fine, but people are talking about that. And so the logical thing is, well, you've got two things, right? I mean, it's going to be like Khalil Mack, ultimately. You pay the price or you trade. And I'm not saying they would trade, have trade, have ever even thought about trading, but if you spin it forward, it's impossible not to come to that point, right? In February... And I mean, I wrote about this at the beginning of the spring. Like, I wonder if they'll talk this offseason, because, boy, you spin this forward to February of 2019 at the combine. You don't want to, like, are they, they're not going to franchise him. I mean, I don't understand why you would. If you're going to pay him $30-plus million for 1 year, you might as well buy him for the next six at 36 or whatever. I mean, so, and you saw what it did in Washington, and it doesn't really work. And franchising your quarterback, if you're renting your quarterback, then what are you buying on your, you know, what are you buying as far as your entire program, right? Like, where's the long-term buy-in from anybody? Where's the direction? It'd be like going year to year with your coach. It's really not tenable. So you're either paying Aaron Rodgers money or you're not. That's just the reality. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying one's right, one's wrong, whatever, but like, and the Khalil Mack trade, like that really happened. Like somebody traded two ones and gave a guy the most money that anybody's ever made on that side of the ball. And he's not a quarterback, and he's never been a part of really a winning team. So what would Russell Wilson be worth? Well, I don't know, but I mean, you'd be super naive if you don't think the places that don't know if they have a quarterback or don't think they have a quarterback aren't thinking along those lines, just in case it ever got to the point in February where, you know,
yeah,
those conversations took place.
Yeah, so how worried should these Seahawks fans be about the 0-2 start?
I don't think it's a matter of worry or whatever. I mean, I don't know that it's worry. I just would say you just have to be cognizant of what's going on and what's not going on. And again, I'm not trying to make too much of it. I'm not trying to make too little of it. I'm just putting it out there. But to your point, there's a whole bunch of different ways to do things. Yeah. So I don't know where it's going. I mean, we'll see. Look, maybe they come to Russell Wilson 2 days after the season ends with an Aaron Rodgers deal.
Jason Lockenfora,
fait accompli.
Yeah, Jason Lockenfora is our guest. We are talking some NFL with our NFL insider from CBS Sports. All right, so Pittsburgh's got a bit of a mess going on right now. And, I mean, you already have one of the best players in the National Football League sitting on the sidelines, and now Antonio Brown. This is not new with any of these guys. Mike Tomlin intimidates the hell out of me, but apparently he doesn't his own players. So
yeah, he runs a loose ship.
Does he have a mess? What kind of a mess does he have on his hands right now?
I mean, it's interesting. They're at a critical point here. Last year, they had a mess on their hands, if you recall, after the national anthem. And, you know, he met with some of his team, but not all of them. And the players thought that everybody was going to be in the – after Trump called them SOBs, right? Remember, the players thought everybody was going to be in the locker room. Then the coaches end up on the sidelines, and Alejandro Villanueva, their military veteran left tackle, ends up, you know, kind of on the field, kind of not on the field, with players underneath. It was botched, and it divided their locker room, and it was ugly. And then they went out and pretty much ran the table the rest of the way, you know, and won that division again and, you know, came close to pushing for a Super Bowl. That sort of derision has brought out the best in them in the past. I don't know that it will now because Le'Veon Bell's not there. And they're under siege on a lot of levels, and there's a lot of fires to put out. And, I, you know, we'll see. But could the 2018 Steelers become a lot like the 2017 Seahawks? I think possibly. I mean, because you've got a coach who gives guys a wide berth, you know what I mean, and people are allowed to be themselves and express themselves, and all that stuff is awesome and is part of what has made those two teams for a period of time among the very best in the league. But at a certain point, you know, do guys go too far off the rails? Do you have too many of those personalities? Do you have to start weeding things out? Do guys start holding out? Do guys, you know what I mean? Like, you guys lived it. So I'm waiting to see how it goes, but there are some parallels there, and we'll see if you know, they pull it out and Le'Veon comes back at some point and they're one of the best teams in the league in the second half of the year and in a watered-down AFC, I wouldn't write them off just yet. But, you know, if that doesn't happen, you already know the running back's gone and now they got to re-up with Ben, but at what price? And, you know, are they going to – Juju's about to get paid. Are we going to pay Juju and Antonio Brown? And all they start having all those macro-level questions, the kind of stuff that people in Seattle were talking about last year.
I'm loving all these blockbuster trades. I'm hoping the Steelers trade both of them. I love all of this stuff. So, you know, maybe they
get
rid of...
How many people were out there saying there's no way Khalil Mack's going to be traded, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of people saying that, writing that. And then there were some people like me and some others saying, no, they're either going to pay him or they're going to trade him, and they're not paying him. So at some point, they're going to trade him. And, I mean, I think that more and more teams are being realistic about that. And, again, more young GMs, more people who aren't stuck in their old fuddy-duddy ways. Well, that's not how we do business in the NFL. Well, it may be how you start doing business now.
We joked about Corey Coleman being traded to the Patriots and watch him catch 100 balls. That was a joke.
Not so fast.
Josh Gordon being traded to the New England Patriots. I think he could catch 100. Maybe not 100, but he. We obviously know the high risk involved here, but the high reward is unbelievable with this guy teamed with Tom Brady. How does this going to end up washing out?
You know, if I could vouch for the player's availability, if anybody could, then you're giving up more than a 5 for him, and you're looking to extend him, and you're saying, on just as a physical talent, not saying that he is Randy Moss. I would never compare him to Randy Moss. He hasn't had any. His problems are deep and nothing like Randy, and his production has been nothing like Randy. But as a size, speed, strength, freak of nature athlete, this is the closest thing they've had to him.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean he's going to be there, you know what I mean, this Sunday. Doesn't mean he's going to make the team bus the following Sunday. Doesn't mean he's not going to miss a meeting and be cut the following Wednesday. So that's where things get tricky. But playing football on a computer, you could insert him, and then 2 weeks from now, insert Edelman, assuming he still can work the slot and he hasn't fallen off a cliff physically. And the scope of that offense expands exponentially. But they won't ask Gordon to do too much too soon. You know, Josh and those guys, McDaniels, they'll find the 5 to 10 things he can do for us right now, and when those matchups are there, we're going to exploit the hell out of them. They also have a backup quarterback there, Brian Hoyer, who I can recall when he was starting in Cleveland one night against Atlanta. I think it might have been Gordon's first game back from one of those lengthy suspensions. I think he targeted him 25 times in a game and may have completed. It was either like 17 catches on 21 targets or 20 catches on 25 targets, but he's seen this dude at the height of his prowess, so we'll see. For them, it's worth the risk. I know he's not going to destroy their culture. He's not going to, you know, turn young players the wrong way. And if he doesn't work out, they'll spit him out like they did Ocho Cinco and Albert Haynesworth and some of these other dudes they bought low on in the past.
Fitzpatrick or Winston?
Fitzpatrick. That's not even, I mean, I don't even know the counter argument. I mean, that's a team that a lot of people thought would struggle to win games, period. That's a team that had a coach and a GM very much on the hot seat coming into the year, and that's a team that they haven't had a cupcake schedule. They beat the Saints, who idiots like me thought could be going to the Super Bowl, and they beat the Eagles, who, best I can recall, are the defending champions, and they did it with style and flair, and the offense has opened up in ways we've never seen, and DeSean Jackson, who looked lost last year with Winston, is looking like the DeSean Jackson who was in Philadelphia 10 years ago, and I don't know why you would touch a damn thing. Not for Jameis Winston, not for somebody who has been moderately productive at times, but sort of an abomination at others, and who doesn't seem to have the requisite maturity and development and self-awareness to really lead your team and be that face of the franchise player. So I'm in no hurry to play Jameis Winston, and from everybody I'm talking to down there, I don't believe they are either.
Was it the best post-game press conference in NFL history?
I can say this. So we sit there and we watch the games in sort of this green room area, and there's like, you know, 3 bigger screens and like 12 smaller screens, and, you know, I'm taking notes and watching all the games, and it, like, to get me to get up out of my seat, something's got to happen, right? They got to bring like the pizza in or something. Like, and there's one little monitor that's showing, you know, we get like the feeds of the press conference stuff, and I'm like, wait a minute. And I, like, get up, and I walk all the way across the room, and then I take a picture. Like, that doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, that's not happening. Like, I was like, I got to capture this for posterity. I mean, and I'm, like, thinking it's probably going to go viral anyway. But to see it in real time, like, to see him walk up to that podium, and I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on down there? Meanwhile, there's other games going on. I'm like, wait a minute, is that's Fitzpatrick? Oh, my God, what is he wearing? I got to get a closer look. Oh, I got to take a picture. Yeah. That'll stick with me for a while. But more power to him,
man. That was awesome.
I mean, good for him. And good for Bortles, too. Bortles is feeling himself. He's got confidence and swag oozing out. Go for yours, man. Prove people wrong. That's great.
All right, just quickly, scale from 1 to 10. How big of a fiasco for the Seahawks was the whole Tom Johnson thing?
I got to be honest. It's not one that I got super caught up in.
Okay. All right. I should have ended. I should have ended on the Fitzpatrick.
Bigger,
I should have ended.
Fish to fry. Yeah.
All right. We'll leave it at that. If I could have edited that question out, I would, because we could have really ended on a really high note there, picturing Ryan Fitzpatrick together. In his shades and his in his hairy chest.
Well, that's our happy place. We can go back there anytime we want.
All right, man. Thanks. We appreciate it.
No worries, guys. Have a good one.
All right.
Thank you.
Jason Lockenfora joining us here, our NFL insider from CBS Sports, breaking down some really compelling stories going on in the National Football League right now. And, you know, we'll have time to talk about some of them on the other side. And we will have an opinion on the Tom Johnson thing as well. So coming back here in a moment, we've got more on the Seahawks, more on the league, more on the Steelers. I want to talk a little bit about the Steelers situation. Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Now back to Chuck and Buck on your home for the 12th man in the NFL. Seattle's original diehard sports station. Sports Radio 950 KJR.
When you're singled out, the red, well, it filters through.
I can't even explain to the listening audience the chasmic difference between the coffee that is provided for the employees here and any brand of coffee that can be bought on the streets. This isn't my favorite.
No.
This tastes like nectar.
Really?
Yes.
It's just overall goodness compared to the
this
sludge.
Tastes like the sweat on the sex god Venus's shoulder after a workout.
Oh.
Compared to what it is that is trying to be played off as coffee in this building,
yeah,
on a daily basis. And I don't normally paint myself in that corner. You know that.
I'll
bring my own coffee from home. Today I got caught between a rock and crappy coffee.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good.
But then, the nicest thing any salesman's ever done for me in this business in 25 years occurred. Our guy, Adam, brought me in some coffee from off the street, and it is delicious.
Is it?
Yes. Thank you.
I brought myself. Adam. I went doubles. I went double today.
Doubles?
The full vat of coffee on my way in.
You are a vat guy. You're a big man over there, even though you are getting smaller by the minute.
The 30-10, I'm dropping LBs. I won't even be able to lift that thing
in a week. It's remarkable. It is remarkable. What are you down, 26 pounds?
25 pounds.
Don't get small on me. You
I'm not
to be big.
Oh, I'm not getting small. Don't worry. If I think the goal was 265 or something, and if I get to like 275 and I'm like, all right, I'm feel like I'm looking small, I'm done. Shutting her down right there.
I think that's a great idea to accomplish the goal, and then look at how much fun you can have not worried if you put 20 back on.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, oh gosh, I'm under 300 pounds for the first time in a while. I'm just going to stay under 300 and I'm good.
There you go. All right, well, this is the best way that I can describe what happened here yesterday with your Seattle Seahawks. You remember Tommy Boy when he's in the cafeteria and he's got his dinner roll and he's trying to explain how every time he tries to make a sale, I like my
player and I like it, I rub it. I like it.
Oh, yep. He doesn't like Tommy Boy.
I sure don't.
He doesn't like Tommy Boy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just talking to you and everybody else with a good sense of humor.
Right, right.
You know that scene in Tommy Boy where he's got the dinner roll and he's like, here's my sale and I love it and I cherish it and I rub it.
Sounds
and
hilarious.
I kiss it and I rub it on my face. And then right when I'm getting ready to make the sale.
Exactly.
And then he shreds the dinner roll into 1,000 pieces and scares the hell out of the waitress.
Mm-hmm. Comedy. Pure comedy.
I think that's what happened this past week with John Schneider and Tom Johnson.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Tom.
I like him.
I like him. We're going to name him a starter. You know, I just rub him. We're really happy with him. He's starting over Nas Jones. But then we're going to try to slip him through with a waiver wire. And
it just blew up my face. Yeah. I would say that's a blow up.
That's what happened in the Tom Johnson situation. Now, it's not the end of the world. And as Jason Lockenfora just put it in our last segment, like, you know what? That's not a big enough fish for me to fry. You know, he's an NFL guy. He's writing stories about Tom Brady, Josh Gordon, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown. I get that. But as Greg Bell pointed out, in terms of how you can screw up a sale,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's basically writing a book on it. What the Seahawks did with Tom Johnson. Now, I will say this, maybe they didn't care. Like, you guys are making way too big a deal. That guy's not that good a player. He was filling a spot, and we totally understood the risk that we were taking, and we really didn't care. We would have taken him back because we needed a warm body, but we would much rather have this safety we traded from the Raiders, and you're going to find that out in time. Yeah. Stay in your lane, talk boy. Maybe that's what they're feeling.
You know what? I don't know Jack Squad about how that whole thing works, but I'm going to tell you, that is not, I don't even think that's a possibility. There's no way that they would be like, here's a good idea. Let's sign this vet. Let's get him to start our week one.
Give him $2 million on our cap.
Give him $2 million on our cap.
Mm-hmm.
Give him $2 million guaranteed. We'll do this little finagle Johnson for a guy that didn't play in week two. And then now somebody else snipers him. He double dips. And you're literally going to pay him and take a kip or a hit to your cap to play you. No, that doesn't.
Yeah.
They can say that, and they might say, stay in your lane, talk show boys.
But and they totally like, Tommy Boyed it.
Yeah. Oh, God. So bad.
And they, I don't know.
This is a good idea.
They were driving along, and they were driving, and they were driving.
Yeah.
And then the car burst into flames.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
And I don't know about Tom Johnson as a player. I don't know how good he is. All I know is two things. The Vikings fan reaction on social media, all over social media, when he was let go and Seattle got him. And then the Vikings fan reaction yesterday when the Vikings were able to get him back. The Vikings fans view him as a very, very nice piece to their defensive line rotation.
Mm-hmm.
They view him, I mean, they think he's really good.
Really good compliment to Linval Joseph. I don't know if they have a Linval Joseph here. In Seattle right now. But, yeah, I agree with you both. It was totally botched. It was totally Tommy Boyd. They're just better than that. They've always been better than that.
Mm-hmm.
John and Pete together as a team. I mean, and so I don't know what's happening. But this has been a head-scratching 24, 36, 48 hours or whatever in how to run an NFL organization.
Yeah.
And I'll add the Carson thing to it as well. Just the entire, what need was there to mislead us in any way? I mean, you just decided, you know what? I had a feel for Penny. We drafted him in the first round for a reason. We went with Penny, you know, and we'll reassess the position this week, see who has a better week of practice, and it might come down to that going forward. It might be a week-to-week decision. Just tell us that. Don't tell us that you threw under the bus your starting running back. I mean, have you really valued him as your starting running back? Number one, you're not putting him on special teams. And number two, you're not going to put him in a position to have to defend him and his conditioning.
Yeah. Well, and you're also not going to, if you do put him on special teams, and you've had some sort of talk with your special teams coach and said, hey, if he's running the ball well, and where I'm going to keep using him, then take him off special teams, then there would be some sort of communication there. So I feel like the...
Yeah, why would you miscommunicate with your starting running back's availability? That's unforgivable. I think that's the worst admission you could possibly make.
That's what I was thinking. It's like, okay, it's one thing for you to screw it up and say, okay, he was gassed. Well, that's bad. You threw him under the bus, and you're just ill-informed. And then for you to come clean...
Have an entire night to think about it.
And you come clean with, well, I didn't know. I thought he was just tired. That he looked tired on the sidelines. Don't you all have headsets and you push a button and go,
get headsets.
Hey, is Carson, you could walk up to his face and say it.
Forget that. You had halftime.
How you feeling?
You had 15 minutes to reset everything and try to figure out, all right, let's get on the same page with our starting running back.
Well, and at some point, too, you would be like, I don't care if I thought he was tired at 11 minutes left in the second quarter. I'm going to think probably, let's just say there's 3 minutes left in the third quarter. Well, he's probably rested by now. Wouldn't you try it then? So there's something about it that is a little fishy. It's like, okay, if it boils down to, I want to see Penny run, then just say, I want to see Penny run. Don't give some other roundabout thing about him being gassed.
You made up a bad lie, and then you spent the entire night trying to think of a better lie, and you came up with a worse one.
Yeah, not good.
How?
Well, my mom always taught me,
honestly,
don't lie.
Your explanation for that entire mess the next day was, we didn't communicate on the availability of our starting running back.
Ooh, that'll be forgivable. Talk show boys won't eat that up at all.
Who in the history of sports has ever done that?
I don't get that.
Imagine Steve Kerr, when we benched Draymond Green, we never talked about putting him back in.
No, I thought he was gassed.
And that's why we didn't win that game against the Spurs tonight.
Yeah, that wouldn't go over very well.
Come on.
Bad one.
All right, coming up next, college football week, get a little bit of that started. I want to talk about Jake Browning, and people are saying something's gone wrong. Well, there's a reason for that. Something's gone wrong. We will explain next.